Hello, and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from the December 15th edition of People, the Winter 2025 edition of Real Simple, and Oprah Daily. A few of the articles that I am sharing today include The Jonas Brothers Have Every Reason to Celebrate, A Very Lopez Christmas, and This Is Your Brain on Hope. The Jonas Brothers Have Every Reason to Celebrate. Nick, Kevin, and Joe look back at their incredible year and reflect on two decades of fame, plus a lifetime as best friends. By Andrea Laventhal and Alexandra Schoenfeld. Photographs by Peter Yang. This is from People Magazine, Best of 2025. As far as celebrity writers go, the Jonas Brothers list is as short as it gets. After two decades in the spotlight, they have only one ask for their People cover shoot on a Sunday afternoon in October at the Thompson Hotel in Houston, a TV in the room so they can watch football. But Kevin, 38, Joe, 36, and Nick, 33, who will soon have the crowd at the 19,000-seat Toyota Center scream singing every word to every song at their concert, barely have a minute to sit down. The New Jersey natives and Giants fans whip through various photo setups and ask for the score even when the answer hurts. The Giants lost to the Broncos in a 33-32 nail-biter. An anything but lazy Sunday is typical for the Jonas Brothers, who were everywhere this year. They hosted a JonasCon fan convention in March to celebrate the 20th anniversary of their debut as precocious teen pop rockers. In August, they launched their seventh album, the critically acclaimed Greetings from Your Hometown, and kicked off the massive 75-day Jonas 20 tour, which they've extended until the end of the year. Now they're starring in their first holiday movie, A Very Jonas Christmas Movie, on Disney Plus. While nostalgia is an undeniable draw for the millennial fans who've loved them since they had flat ironed hair and sang about a girl named Mandy, they're also winning over a new generation of devotees. We're making stuff for our fans, and our fans have kids themselves now, said Nick. So do all the brothers, all devoted girl dads. Kevin has Elena, 11, and Valentina, 9, with wife Danielle. Joe has Willa, 5, and Delphine, 3, with his ex-wife Sophie Turner. And Nick has Malty, 3, with wife Priyanka Chopra Jonas. As they gear up for another busy year, the brothers reflect. How would you describe your 2025? Kevin Jonas, it has not stopped. Joe Jonas, it's been full on. Nick Jonas, it's been a year of surprises. What's it like being on tour 20 years into your career? Nick, it's still baffling to us that we're doing this at this level and that fans are supporting us in the way they are. The practical aspect is that we are getting older and don't have all the energy we had when we were in our teens. Now it's a little bit of a slower start in the day to wind up for the evening. What are your pre-show rituals? Joe, we have TVs in our dressing rooms where we can watch people enter the venue to see their excitement. Nick, I've been finishing a solo album while we've been on tour. The writing process backstage has been a really good way to stay energized. Sunday Best will drop February 6th. Kevin, I've been spending a lot of time going through homework on FaceTime. I've learned a lot about how math is now taught. New math is not for the weak of heart. On social media, fans are showing just how emotional they get at your shows. What are you doing to make them cry? Nick, at the start, I say, it's not just the three of us up here. It's each and every one of you. You're part of the story. Bringing Franklin, their youngest brother, 25, and our parents, Denise and Kevin Sr., out at the end of the show to recreate the Jonas family living room is a moment that even makes me emotional. Joe, what do you think of the flirty signs your fans hold up for you while you're performing? Joe, I think it's hilarious, as long as it's playful. You're going to a concert, have fun with it. A very Jonas Christmas movie feels surprisingly personal as your characters face their insecurities, and we even see some of your daughters in it. Joe, it's been a bucket list item for us to do a holiday film. We were like, do we just go all humor? Or do we go all personal? It's always a little difficult when you're playing versions of yourself. Nick, we wanted to give the audience a real look at our life, but what I love about this is that it comes at a really important time for us in our careers, but more importantly, as parents. Speaking of growing up alongside your fans, what was it like to shoot the upcoming Camp Rock 3, 17 years after your original Disney Channel hit? Kevin, it was wild. We got to the set and we saw cast members from the original movies on the Camp Rock Final Jam stage. Thank God those movies happened. Thank God Joe got cast and they decided to put me and Nick in it as well. Joe, I was flooded with emotion again. I was like, oh man, I didn't expect to be hit like this. Nick, it's a pretty special thing to think back to when we made the first Camp Rock back in 07 and how crazy our life was at that moment. How do you guys support each other during challenging times? Nick, it's important to be there and just be able to listen when someone's going through something. Not to think that it's your job to give them advice or to fix their situation. When we're on tour, we're on a bus together. We live together. So we've had to get good at giving each other space. You're all girl dads. What have you learned from your daughters this year? Nick, I have learned a lot about princesses. I have learned so much. It's incredible when you get to the why phase of parenting, which we're in now, where everything's why. You have to actually look at things as an adult and go, yeah, why? Joe, I've learned a lot more about K-pop demon hunters than I ever anticipated knowing. I've learned so much about being a dad from my little girls. They have no schedule. They're not like, can you hurry up? So being present with them and being able to just act like phones and time don't exist, that is most important. Kevin, I second that. The time and the presence. Putting the phone down and being in the moment. What do you hope to teach them about love and relationships? Joe, to be a kid as long as they possibly can. They can talk to me and their mom about anything. That they feel the most safety and comfort they can possibly feel. Whatever that has to do with. I'd rather they look at me like a friend and talk to me. What do you hope that they inherit from you? Nick, I hope she adopts a lot of my wife's traits. She's my favorite person in the world, So if I could have two-ish versions of them, that would be pretty special. Joe, hopefully kindness and understanding and trying to see the best in people. Kevin, I am impressed every day with how independent they're already becoming. When I'm traveling and touring, Danielle does such a great job with them, empowering them to be themselves and make decisions. What traits do you hope not to pass along? Kevin, how long is this interview? I'm a reactive person. It's just who I am. I work on it very much, and I've been talking to a therapist about it for a long time. So hopefully that's something we cannot pass genetically down. Joe, wait if you think you are going to think about music or the entertainment industry. Just give it a couple years. Nick, I'm not great at math. English, I loved. I'm hoping that she gets it and is acing things. Can you all do a French braid? Nick, our little girl has curly hair like me, so it's a process, but I'm getting it down. Joe, oh yeah. Kevin, yes, and I'm working on the fishtail now. It's what all the girls are doing on their soccer team. You're being inducted into the New Jersey Hall of Fame. Is there any other honor you'd love to get? Nick, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame one day would be pretty sweet. Joe, a rest stop named after us in New Jersey. Kevin, that's the one for me. That's all I need. Nick mentioned his solo music. Kevin and Joe, do you have anything in the works? Kevin, I'm excited about the song Changing, his new debut single, and wherever it leads me. Joe, we went to New York and had a week at one of the most incredible studios. We have 4 rooms going at once at some points. You just step in and it could be Nick's solo song, or it could be a solo song for me, or DNCE, Joe's band, or the brothers. I have a bunch of stuff in the works. Kevin, the stuff they're creating is the greatest music that I've heard from them both ever. What are you looking forward to at year's end? Joe, a quiet day, around the holidays to have a quiet morning and familiar faces. That's what it's about. Nick, I'm excited to build a fire, putting logs on a fireplace and sitting there with my family listening to our favorite holiday music. Kevin, we're in a new house, so our first Christmas in the house. That'll be really cool. Let there be snow and a fire pit. Nothing better. This has been People Magazine's Best of 2025. The Jonas Brothers have every reason to celebrate. A Very Lopez Christmas. Mario Lopez, his wife Courtney, and their 3 kids celebrate the love and chaos they share during the holidays and beyond. By Daniela Avila. Photographs by Britt and Shane Benton, The Range Photography. This is a People Magazine exclusive. Moments before Mario Lopez and his family are about to shoot for their annual Christmas card at home in Los Angeles, no one is in position. The actor and host, 52, and his 15-year-old daughter, Gia, are in another room filming a TikTok dance. His wife, Courtney, 43, is finishing getting ready, and his sons, Dominic, 12, and Santino, 6, are chasing each other down a hallway with their 3 barking bulldogs following close behind. But when all that energy comes together, their love for one another is palpable. I love being at home, Mario says with a smile. My family brings me fulfillment. They're what I work so hard for. In addition to his day job, hosting Access Hollywood, Mario worked on two Christmas movies for Great American Family this year. He produced Chasing Christmas, premiering December 21st, and Dominic stars in it. "He's very natural and he works really hard," Mario said. "I'm impressed." Mario starred in The Christmas Spark, which premiered last month and pays homage to the firemen who worked tirelessly to put out the wildfires that ravaged Los Angeles in January. "I wanted to tip my hat to them," he says. "We've had to evacuate our house here, and the firemen were so great. I have a great deal of respect for those guys and all they do. They're real heroes." Gia also had a revelation after the ups and downs of this year. "I don't say it a lot, but I am really grateful for my brothers," she says. "You can't always count on other people, but something I realized specifically this year is I can always count on my brothers." Still, she notes, her family can be very chaotic. Courtney, who met Mario in 2008 while working in a Broadway revival of A Chorus Line, adds, "Hands are flying, fists are flying, but they're there for each other all the time. They look out for each other." She also wants to make sure she and Mario set an example for the kids. "I want them to see how in love we are and our foundation," she says. "We work together as a team." With that team in place and multiple projects to juggle, the Saved by the Bell alum is making every career move with intention. "If I say yes, it's got to be pretty important. I always want to highlight good, positive stories, especially coming from a Latino point of view," says Mario, whose parents are from Mexico. "That doesn't mean you have to beat someone over the head with a tortilla. It just means you have to tell good, universal stories with maybe a little bit of flavor." For now, though, he's looking forward to winding down. "It's all about spending time together, drinking, eating tamales, listening to music, watching movies, and just focusing on what's important." As Mario considers the year ahead, he hopes to continue his good momentum and also put the phone down more. "I'm constantly trying to work on myself. Being Catholic, we start over every week anyway," he quips. But at the end of the day, he's content. "I'm healthy, my family's healthy, I already feel like I'm winning." You've been listening to a People Magazine exclusive, A Very Lopez Christmas. This is your brain on hope. There's nothing pie in the sky about it. Researchers say this positive mindset drives us to think bigger, take action, and find solutions. By Jennifer King Lindley, published August 25th, 2025. This is from Oprah Daily. The climate sizzles, wars rage, our politics get uglier. When the world seems like one giant dumpster fire, can we still experience the uplifting sensation of hope? It may feel naive, even Pollyannish, to imagine, indeed expect, that things will get better, perhaps become amazing. But experts who study hope say it is far from wishful thinking or good vibes only toxic cheer. Hope is an inconvenient virtue. We don't need it so much when things are going perfectly. It's when things are crumbling to dust that hope is most important, says Jacqueline Mattis, PhD, a psychologist and the dean of the School of Arts and Sciences at Rutgers University, Newark. In these uncertain times, social scientists, such as Mattis, are turning to the phenomenon of hope with renewed interest, studying what it is, how it benefits us, and how we can harness more of its very real power. One happy takeaway: hopefulness is malleable, says Matthew Gallagher, PhD, a professor of clinical psychology at the University of Houston and co-editor of the Oxford Handbook of Hope. We can get better at it. How hope works. You may have felt its mysterious stirrings. We speak of being suddenly filled with it. In times like these, it can seem as elusive as grabbing a butterfly. But in fact, psychologists say hope is both an uplifting emotion and a learnable mindset. Hope is active, not passive, says Gallagher. When we hope, we imagine both a goal for the future and a pathway to achieve it. It is both expectation and plan. Hope buoys us along, giving us the persistence to overcome obstacles in our way, says Gallagher. If optimism is the blithe expectation that good things are just bound to happen somehow, hope asks, what am I going to do to make them happen? When setbacks inevitably occur, you believe in yourself and your goal, so you're not going to give up, Gallagher explains. You're going to keep pushing. Perhaps you wish to live a long, healthy life. Instead of idly daydreaming about themselves as windsurfing centenarians, hopeful people ask, what does my goal look like in concrete terms? What kind of exercise plan should I start now to get there? Gallagher says. People who measure higher in hope are better at articulating the big goal, but also the little goals along the way. The gift that keeps giving. Feeling hopeful can create what psychologists call an upward spiral, says Jennifer Chevens, PhD, a clinical psychologist and professor of psychology at The Ohio State University. When we make progress towards something we value, we get a burst of positive emotion. In that positive state, we think more expansively, more creatively. We can envision possibilities. This affirming belief that you are the little engine that could has a host of benefits, research is finding. People who are hopeful are healthier, are less prone to depression, and experience less physical pain. The emotion of hope can also contribute powerfully to our sense of purpose, the belief that we are here for a reason, says Megan Edwards, PhD, a research scholar at Duke University. Her 2025 study found that those who feel more hopeful tend to see life as more meaningful. We may not feel joy during times of difficulties or of suffering, but we can still feel the positive emotion of hope, she says. It helps us see the light at the end of the tunnel. Of course, being hopeful doesn't mean donning rose-colored glasses or blinders. There's so much existential despair and worry about the future in therapy rooms right now, says Lane Baker, LMFT, a psychotherapist in Los Angeles. The salve is not denying these feelings or evading the hard stuff. It is first validating and honoring them. Sit with the feelings, but know that's not the end of the story. Hope is short for hold on, possibility exists, says Baker. 5 ways to be more hopeful, even right now. We asked experts how to start exercising the muscle of hopefulness. 1, contemplate the possibilities. A first step to hoping is dreaming big, a skill many of us are rusty at. Contemplating the miracle question, a classic therapy intervention, may prime your pump. Ask yourself, suppose tonight while I slept, a miracle occurred. When I awake, what are some things that would tell me life has suddenly gotten better? It can help turn off that part of your brain that is skeptical, that is stuck, says Matt Sosnowski, LCSW, the founder of Philadelphia Talk Therapy. It connects us with what we most value in life and helps us start to define those things. If your miracle is that you awake next to an amazing partner or are leading a packed meeting at a nonprofit you started, what does that tell you about what is most meaningful to you? Where could you begin? Number two, draft a plan. As a practicing therapist, Chivins often works with clients on goal mapping. At the bottom of a piece of paper, mark an I am here X. At the top, write a goal you are hoping to achieve. For instance, get a new job where I can be more creative. Now, sketch out a couple of possible paths to get there. Arranging networking coffees, taking a training class, and obstacles you might encounter. Not enough time in the day. Now you have the start of an action plan. Anticipating pitfalls and brainstorming solutions preps you to take them in stride, she says. They just become part of the process. Find your hopes circles, number three. Hope is contagious, says Mattis. Surrounding yourself with other dreamers and doers can inspire you. They could be like-minded friends, fellow activists, your church group. For me, my family is my hope circle. We remind each other of our family stories. My great-great-great-grandfather was an enslaved person. Over a lifetime of struggle, he bought his way to freedom, then freed his children. If he could do that, what can we accomplish? Number four, seek out good news. A digital diet of doom scrolling can breed pessimism and hopelessness, says Edwards. So try hope scrolling instead. I purposely follow sources that share good news and positive information, she says. She is a fan of the Instagram account Good Good Good. Keeping up with the positive can help you stay inspired. And number five, start small. Yes, the world's problems often feel totally overwhelming. Instead of throwing up your hands in despair, take a small but sure first step toward a goal you find meaningful, suggests Chivins. You might not be able to single-handedly end global warming, but can you ask your neighbor for information about their new solar panels? Hope is asking yourself, can I find a way to be some small part of the good in the world? Chivin says, just imagine what would happen if we all did that. Everything amazing that humans have achieved is thanks to the super hopers among us, concludes Mattis. Those hopers imagine vast and beautiful outcomes that others could not. We need those moonshots now. You have been listening to This is Your Brain on Hope from Oprah Daily, the online newsletter. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. Word of the Week, Attachment Wounds. You might not remember your traumas, but your body does. By Cassie Hurwitz, published November 10th, 2025 from Oprah Daily. You might not remember your earliest years, but what you experienced as an infant and young child can live on inside your body and influence how you interact with others as an adult. That's the basis of attachment theory, a psychological concept that's all over social media as people post about whether their style is secure, anxious, avoidant, or disorganized. But to really understand your attachment style's impact on your relationships, you need to uncover your attachment wounds, also known as the pain or trauma left behind from past relationships. An attachment wound is our bodies remembering what experiences felt safe or not, explains Jessica Baum, a licensed therapist and the author of Anxiously Attached and Safe. If we haven't processed a negative memory, it lives in our nervous system and we attach a belief to it, like I'm unlovable or I'm not good enough. Growing up with an absent or neglectful parent, for example, might lead you in adulthood to feel straight up abandoned or betrayed whenever your teen son ditches you for a night out with his friend. Those feelings are typically more intense than those of someone without this particular attachment wound and can manifest as real pain. You might experience queasiness in your gut or a tightness in your chest, Baum says. Your body has experienced this before and is telling you you're in danger. Not all attachment wounds come from childhood memories or traumas. You may have lingering hurt from a previous partner or former best friend who made fun of you. You could also be blessed with a mostly secure attachment style, but still slip into moments of anxiety or insecurity when a wound is triggered. Bringing these wounds to the surface starts with developing stronger interoception, which is the ability to listen to what your body is saying, Baum says. Notice if nausea kicks in anytime your partner rolls their eyes at you, or if you get a stomach ache when friends cancel plans. Then open up about your past experiences with someone you trust. Sharing your wounds with the right people is part of how we heal, Baum says. You've been listening to Word of the Week, Attachment Wounds, from Oprah Daily. Ack, Kathy, turns 50. The iconic comic strip about a frazzled every woman touched hearts across the country. And 5 decades later, it still does, by Liz Schumer from People Magazine. Kathy Guiswhite, 75, doesn't mind seeing her mother in her face when she looks in the mirror these days. After all, she has her mom to thank for a lot of things, including encouraging her to create the wildly popular comic strip, Kathy. The comic, about a relatable woman struggling to balance work, dating, fashion, and food, celebrates 50 years this year. It launched 3 TV specials, more than 30 books, and a veritable mountain of merchandise. But it all started with a lonely young executive and a pencil. I had a wonderful career and a miserable love life, Guiswhite recalls of the strip's birth in 1976, when she was working as a 26-year-old vice president at an advertising agency. One night, I drew a picture of what I looked like sitting there, waiting and writing and eating, she says. The picture made me laugh, and laughing made me feel better. She sent it to her mom, Anne. My mother had always encouraged me to keep my innermost feelings private, Guiswhite says, but she insisted these drawings could be a comic strip for millions of people to enjoy. Guiswhite put together a portfolio, sent it to the Universal Press Syndicate, and the little strip about the 4 basic guilt groups was born. By 1980, she was drawing Kathy full-time. The strip ran until 2010. I was a product of the generation that, for the first time, all the doors were opening, she says. I couldn't tell my career-minded friends that I wanted to be in a relationship, and I couldn't tell my more traditional friends that I wanted a career. I felt completely alone. That was the birth of the comic strip. Guys White went on to adopt daughter Ivy in 1992 and marry screenwriter Christopher Wilkinson in 1997. They divorced in 2010. When it came time to collect the thousands of strips into a 50th anniversary box set, she enlisted Ivy, now 33, to help digitize the pen and ink drawings. My dream was that it would have filled her with compassion towards me and what my generation went through, she says. She looked at the strips, just stunned at what the world was like for Mom. But some things haven't changed. Women still fight for equal pay, she notes. And back then, exactly as it is now, it's not okay to admit you're vulnerable. Body positivity has changed how everybody thinks of their bodies, and it's wonderful, except if you still don't feel good about yourself. It's not okay to not be okay. But these days, Guys White isn't focused on looking backward. She has a newborn granddaughter, Quinn, and spends time with her mom, who at 103 is still able to laugh at herself. She's written books of essays and relishes helping people feel seen. I've heard from a lot of women who told me they felt exactly the same way I did, she says. The most touching letters came from women who told me they had my comic strip tucked in diaries or drawers. It meant a lot to them. You've been listening to ACK, Kathy Turns 50, from People. Bumps in the road. So your trip isn't working out the way you'd hoped? Keep this advice in your back pocket. Just remove it when you go through security, and you'll be prepared for whatever turbulence comes your way. By Melissa Matthews. Illustrations by Josie Portillo. This is from Real Simple Magazine. Advice, inspiration, and a little peace of mind. Having things go wrong on vacation can be soul-crushing. You did so much planning. You had such high hopes for your time off. Unfortunately, many of us are bound to suffer a snafu at some point. In a survey of 3,689 people who traveled in 2023, 77% reported facing at least one issue. Unexpected costs and canceled plans accounted for many of the problems, according to Bankrate, the financial services company that commissioned the research. The odds may not be on your side, but here we are. Hence, this advice for what to do when a travel disaster strikes, and how to hopefully avoid it in the first place. The disaster. Your flight is canceled. What to do if it happens? You need to, well, jet. Getting rebooked on the first flight available comes down to how fast you're able to get in touch with someone, whether on the phone, through the app, or in person, says Katie Nastro of the airline deal tracking platform Going. You'll often be given rebooking options in the airline's app, so Nastro recommends reviewing those while waiting in the customer service line if you're already at the airport. Don't like what you see? Still standing in line? Call the airline while you wait. They can see in real time what's available, and bigger airlines might have interline agreements where they're able to book you on another carrier, Nastro says. Keep in mind, you may not get exactly what you want. There's not an endless supply of seats to get rebooked on when something major occurs, Nastro says. If the airline doesn't have a flight option you like, you can ask for a full refund and book with another company that does. However, it will likely cost you much more to purchase a same-day ticket. How to avoid it. The early bird often catches the flight. According to the most recent data from the Department of Transportation in June 2025, 85% of flights departing between 6 a.m. and 6:59 a.m. arrived on time, compared with 54% between 6 p.m. and 6:59 p.m. Those morning flights might be terrible to wake up for, but you will thank yourself in the end because you got to your destination, Nastro says. Also, be proactive, says Brian Kelly, author of How to Win at Travel and founder of The Points Guy, a popular travel site. Don't wait to be told when things are going haywire, Kelly says. I always look at the weather forecast, not just for the city I'm flying out of or to, but also where my plane is coming from, he says. If you're in Miami, but your plane is starting in Buffalo, where there's a blizzard, something could happen. You can use the free app Flight Radar 24 to track your aircraft. The disaster. You hate your home away from home. What to do if it happens? There's mold on the ceiling. The place looks nothing like the photos. The previous guests left a mess. Yes, unfortunately, these are all legitimate risks, according to Christopher Elliott, founder of Elliott Advocacy, a nonprofit consumer advocacy group. Rental platforms usually have policies to help resolve issues, such as inaccurate listings or access issues. But you have to follow the rules precisely, Elliott warns, which requires a lot of reading. Generally, though, it's best to speak up ASAP. If you decide to just grin and bear it and complain later, or leave to stay somewhere else, you likely won't ever get your money back. While Airbnb officially gives customers 72 hours from the time of discovery to report an issue, it will typically just connect you back with your host. So reach out directly. Most of the time, the host will want to fix the issue for you. Maybe they'll have another unit somewhere that they can put you in, or they can call a cleaner, Elliott says. Do this communication via the app or text message, not talking over the phone, because you'll want the records in case your pleas are ignored and you have to complain to the platform. Be understanding. Even a good host may need a grace period to address your concerns. They may be in a different time zone or a different country. You need to give them time to get things fixed, Elliott says, recommending at least an hour. If you can't get in touch with someone at all, then reach out to the platform. Contact the local authorities for emergencies. If you smell gas in the house or fear for your safety, for example. How to avoid it. Book through a service that will work with you to resolve issues, Elliott advises. One like Airbnb or VRBO, not Craigslist. Then read through the terms and conditions for the listing and platform so you know exactly what is and is not included. Take the VRBO Confidence Guarantee, for instance. It covers last-minute owner cancellations, but not yours if, say, you get sick. And put your detective skills to use when picking a rental. Owners often list their properties on several websites, so it's a good idea to look for the listing on every platform. Using the same filters for each search can help you find the property in question. Elliott recommends reading the reviews on each platform for useful information, such as warnings of inaccurate descriptions. Be alert for potentially fake reviews too. If I see too many 5-star reviews, I start getting suspicious, Elliott says. the disaster, you damage your rental car. What to do if it happens? Meeps, you dinged up the driver's side door. Addressing a minor problem can wait until you return the car, says Kevin Fairbanks Bloom, senior travel advisor for AAA Western and Central New York and Buffalo. After something worse, like an accident, first make sure everyone involved is safe. Then file a report with the local police and exchange insurance information with any other drivers, he says. Next, report the accident to the rental company for instructions about how to tow the vehicle, if necessary, and get a replacement, Fairbanks Bloom says. How to avoid it? Aside from the basics of defensive driving, there is no foolproof way to steer clear of car accidents. But you can save yourself a huge hassle by securing good coverage ahead of time. Kelly recommends getting a rewards credit card that offers primary rental car insurance as a perk. Most of the time, that's all you'll need. In fact, you shouldn't get anything else. If you pay for other coverage and you have primary through a card, then you're wasting money because you're paying for usually worse coverage, Kelly says. Another benefit? Your insurance premium isn't at risk the way it would be if you used your personal policy. If anything happens with the car, the bank handles it directly. Your insurance never even knows about it. Now, let's say you didn't actually cause any damage, but the company is saying you did. This is happening more and more as companies adopt AI tools that flag even the tiniest blemishes or mistake shadows and glares for damage. To cover yourself, take as many photos as you can at pickup and drop-off. Snap the outside, the inside, and the license plate number. And if possible, return the car during business hours, Fairbanks Bloom says. Ask for someone to check in your return on a handheld device, to pose for a pic with the vehicle, and if they can, to note no damage in the remarks. If you still get a charge, act quickly and pull out the photo evidence. The disaster, you get sick. What to do if it happens? Your plan of action depends on the city you're visiting and what type of illness you're dealing with. Diarrhea is the most common vacation-related ailment affecting between 30 to 70% of travelers, according to the CDC. Rest, hydration, and an over-the-counter medicine like Imodium could be enough to manage GI symptoms, says Joel Fishbane, MD, an infectious diseases physician at Corwell Health in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. When it's more serious, you have a fever, for instance, see a doctor. That's fairly easy in the U.S. if you have a nationally accepted insurance plan. Find an urgent care center near you. Some prefer that you make an appointment online before you head in. Feeling ill while overseas? If you don't know where to go, contact the U.S. consulate, Fishbane says, to get recommendations for nearby care. If there's no consulate, try the embassy. How to avoid it? You can help protect yourself by keeping your hands away from your mouth, nose, and eyes, Fishbane says. By now, we all know the importance of washing our hands for a full 20 seconds, especially before eating. Speaking of mealtime, fresh produce can carry pathogens, and washing fruits and veggies won't eliminate all germs. Fully cooked food is better, but not risk-free. You can order your meal steaming hot, but the restaurant may serve it on a bed of contaminated lettuce, Fishbane says. Similarly, consider skipping buffets, because food can develop bacteria if kept at the wrong temperatures. Before your trip, Fishbane recommends asking your doctor if you should bring along any prescription meds besides your usual ones, like a prescription for urinary tract infection in case you end up needing it. If you're traveling somewhere remote and have any chronic health conditions, he advises shopping for traveler's insurance that includes health and medical evacuation coverage. The CDC has tips on what to look for at cdc.gov/travel/page/insurance. This is where good planning comes into play, he says. The disaster. You lose your phone. What to do if it happens? Before panicking, try to locate your device using the Find My Phone feature. Best case, you trace it to that cute coffee shop from the morning. If that fails, borrow a phone and contact your provider to report your cell lost or stolen. Be prepared to shell out money for a replacement if you're uninsured. Otherwise, your plan should help cover the cost, though some providers may not ship outside the country. As a workaround, have your replacement sent to someone back home who can mail it to you, or ask if you can get reimbursed to buy a phone locally. You can ask the embassy or consulate for a reputable store. How to avoid it? Don't keep your phone in your back pocket or backpack. Try to be mindful of your surroundings. And before you go, back up your data to the cloud or a separate drive. Ensure your phone's Find feature is enabled and write down important numbers. If you haven't already, secure your phone with a strong passcode, no to 1234, and a biometric lock, such as face ID or fingerprint if available. The disaster. You lose your passport while abroad. What to do if it happens? File a police report, even if it wasn't stolen, for documentation. Then visit the U.S. Department of State website, travel.state.gov, and search for the Lost or Stolen Passport Abroad page. There, you'll get info on applying for an emergency passport and find the address of the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. You have to appear in person to receive one. Here's where things get tricky. You'll need ID and proof of U.S. citizenship, like a birth certificate. Of course, that's not exactly at the top of your packing list. Luckily, these staffers are trained to handle situations like this and should do their best to help. How to avoid it? Travel with a backup you can use to help verify your identity, advises Michelle Couch Friedman, founder and CEO of Consumer Rescue, a nonprofit consumer affairs organization. It's always a good idea to make a copy of your passport and store it separately from your actual passport, she says. You could put the copy in the hotel safe, remember to take it with you when you check out, or in a locked suitcase. It might be worth doing the same with a copy of your birth certificate. For even more safety, Couch Friedman recommends giving a copy of your passport to a friend you could reach out to if needed. Eventually, you will get home with a fun story to tell, no less. You have been listening to Bumps in the Road from Real Simple Magazine. Well, that's a wrap for today's Women's Hour. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kelly Pyle, and I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. I hope you enjoyed the interesting stories in our program today and make plans to join us again next week for another interesting collection of articles from women's magazines. And don't forget, you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can stream as well as access shows on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for both Apple and Android phones. Have a wonderful day and make sure you stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.